Welcome to the first episode of the Litigation Funding Podcast. In this episode, I speak with Guy Harvey of Shepherd Wedderburn. We cover the first funded competition appeals tribunal case, how litigation finance is evolving, as well as the various products that allow both small companies and large companies alike to mitigate risk. We even talk about law firm IPOs and the new commercial court being established in Kazakhstan. So please enjoy this episode.
Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Guy. I will start with, hello and welcome to the Litigation Funding Podcast. I'm thrilled to have Guy Harvey with me today. If you don't know, previously Guy was the head of commercial disputes at Shepherd Wedderburn, and Guy is now focused on funding again at Shepherd Wedderburn. Additionally, Guy has successfully advised on the first funded claim ever in the Competition Appeals Tribunal here in the UK. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you, Patrick.
Excellent. To start things off and to sort of get some context and history, I thought it'd be great to hear more about that first funded claim in the Competition Appeals Tribunal and how that came to be.
Sure, okay. Well, it was really a classic David and Goliath situation, which is where funding first arrived, I think, in the UK. Our client was a small utilities company trying to enter a crowded market and was up against opposition from a large monopoly, which was exercising, as the tribunal found, an abuse of its position of power to try and keep prices high to make it impossible for our client actually to generate a profit on its business model. The litigation had been continuing for some considerable time and really going into the sand until we were instructed, and the client really instructed us as a large ditched attempt to try to get the thing moving on the grounds that they'd exhausted their resources. The directors had strapped themselves very heavily to try to bring the litigation. It was make or break for their company. We were able to go out and find a litigation funder who's prepared to back the case to enable them to carry on bringing it, and also to provide them with insurance against the other side's costs, which became important since the other side immediately tried to get security for costs in the litigation. It was the first case that I'd handled through a formal funder, although obviously the problem of how to bring disputes and pay for them is one which is much older than the history of funding. It goes back many, many years, and all of us in practice have had to grapple with this for decades, probably. But we managed to find a funder. In fact, it was, I think, the first case they had funded in the UK, although that wasn't clear at the time. And we worked cooperatively together to try and find a solution that worked for the client. We were able to bring the case to a conclusion. We were successful. We got the client some money at the end of the day. The directors were all able to bring a sigh of relief. We were paid our costs, and I think everyone was happy. As I said, one facet of the case which was interesting was that the other side immediately tried to bring an application for security on the grounds that the costs of the competition appeal tribunal were going to be substantial, and that were we to lose, our clients would have trouble paying them. The fact we had an insurance policy to cover those was something which we were able to use straight away, which really knocked that argument on the head. We'll let it talk later on about out-of-event insurance, which has developed since then, but at that stage it was a very useful first line of defense in our claim.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that really, you know, puts into context, like you said, the key elements around funding, you know, a situation where a client had exhausted their resources, you know, very much David and Goliath, which is where, you know, the sort of essence of the funding industry has emerged from. And certainly, you know, the importance of insurance when it comes to defeating security for costs. And so the next kind of point then to move on to from there was, you know, your relationship with Burford Capital has also been highly publicized. And as a firm, you've discussed this relationship and how excellent it has been. I was interested to hear, you know, a bit more from you about how this arrangement came to be and just a little bit more about that relationship.
Yeah, okay. I mean, one thing I should say, Patrick, is obviously the first case was Competition Appeal one we talked about was a David and Goliath. Mm-hmm. And although we've had other David Goliath cases then, the funding market has evolved quite dramatically in the last few years. And now one of the principal uses of funding is actually for much larger enterprises who may well otherwise be able to afford to bring the litigation or the dispute, deciding they don't want to pay for it themselves to lay off the cost somewhere else. And that's certainly a large part of the funding which we're seeing at the moment. We've had relationships over the years as a firm with a number of funders. There is a group of funders in the Association of Litigation Funders, which was set up really to try and provide some clarity about how funding worked and some security for people who were using it to make sure the funders did actually have the funds they said they had, and there was adequate capital around and so forth. And we have had dealings with probably most of the funders in that group over the last 6-7 years. We have developed, I think, particularly good links with Burford, who were indeed the funders of the competition case I talked about. And we've always found them to be very receptive to looking at creative ways of handling the partnership and ensuring that what they supply is a solution that actually works for the clients as well as for them. The background has been really the fact that in the marketplace, we've seen a growth of larger organisations wanting to fund claims. And these are not just litigation in the courts, they're also arbitration disputes, both here and internationally. And a move towards wanting to try to avoid the one-off approach of bespoke funding, which originally was anywhere available, which clearly, because it's one-off bespoke, tends to be more expensive. And the growth in the marketplace of individual bespoke portfolio arrangements for clients. And there was a fairly well-publicised, although not supposed to be particularly public, example a couple of years ago of a FTSE 30 company, which is supposed to have obtained funding to cover a whole range of disputes which it was involved in. I was very interested in that development, and it struck me that if it could be done for individual clients with a string of cases, there's no real reason why it shouldn't also be applied across a firm's load of cases. Like many firms, we have a range of cases on the go at any one time, some substantial, some less substantial. But the concept of producing a funding option that enable us to bundle those together and share the risk for ourselves, obviously not for the client, who remain completely safe, enable us to offer a kind of solution which other firms didn't appear to be offering at the time and gave us a greater scope bringing to help our clients. Having had that idea, I discussed it with my colleagues in the firm, and I really went out to talk to different funders and talked to a large number over a period of time. Eventually came forward with a couple of solutions, one of which was the one we entered into with Burford, and then decided we would go down the Burford route, and we negotiated an arrangement which is now just a year old. And I have to say that the relationship was good at the time, and it has survived the first year intact as well, which is good news.
Yeah, absolutely. That is very good to hear. I think, you know, and the point you raise about larger organizations looking at funding and, you know, using it as a way to offset risk, is really an important point about how the industry has matured, you know, beyond just the one-off bespoke funding arrangements. And then sort of in parallel with that, you know, we've spoken about Burford, it's, you know, how mainstream, I suppose, litigation funding has become. And that brought me on to when we first met, you mentioned a sort of wonderful story, which kind of illustrates that point, where a family member, of course, gave you a call and said, you know, I've bought some shares recently. They're a company that do litigation funding. You know, do you know much about this? Have you ever heard of Burford? And I thought, you know, that was a really nice example of how the industry is evolving.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, there are various vehicles which the funders use to obtain funds. Some of them are companies which float on exchanges, such as Burford and some of the others, who raise their money from offerings on the exchange by way of bonds normally. Some of them are individually backed organisations where the funder is an individual, a family office, or a particular hedge fund. And there are as many different varieties as there are funders. I think there are certain things you need to do as a solicitor if you're going into the funding market, and one of them is to make sure that the funder you're using or doing in business with does actually have access to the money which you want and is going to continue to have access to it throughout the period of the case. I mentioned earlier on the Association of Litigation Funders. Now, there are a lot of funders who are not members of the association, and I'm not suggesting that all those are in any way deficient, but certainly all members of the association have to agree to have a degree of capital adequacy to ensure that funds are available. There are also organisations which actually have the funds themselves, rather than some of the people who describe themselves as funders, who are really brokers, who are going around looking for funds once they've been given a case. So I think there is a need to be wary, but certainly it's become mainstream, and those people who've invested in funds have, by and large, when they've been successful, done very well out of the investment. And it's certainly freed up the ability of law firms to conduct cases which they would have struggled to have taken on previously, and that obviously helps clients, which is the object of the exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. The positive effects of the industry have been very far-reaching. And again, that, you know, that's a very relevant point to anybody, you know, listening who may be considering funding. You know, ALF is there to assist. As you pointed out, it certainly, you know, doesn't cover all the funds, and it's not a regulatory body, it's voluntary. But it is important for people, you know, to really, when they choose a funder, think carefully about who they choose and make sure that the funds are available. Because as you say, you know, there are often individuals, you know, where it's mentioned as a fund and really it's more of a brokerage.
Yeah. And of course, one of the things I was going to add to that, Patrick, was obviously as the market has matured and the funders have matured and have more experience under their belts, we're seeing the growth of funders who specialise in particular areas of litigation or particular areas of industry. And that is a very useful tool for lawyers because although it's a fundamental concept of funding within the UK system that the funders have no control over what's happening in the litigation, the control rests always and 100% with the client. There's no doubt that if you are involved with a funder who has experience of cases in that sector, they can be a very useful sounding board, and the advice which they're able to give about what happens, what has happened, is extremely valuable, particularly since very often, as you will know, most disputes which get carried on in the degree of secrecy, and the ins and outs of them are never really revealed to the outside world. And to have some industry inside knowledge from funders is actually quite a useful tool. So I think that's another plus that people can draw on if they're legal advisors bringing funding on board.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's a very, very valid point. I think we mentioned, you know, we spoke about this when we met in terms of, you know, the caliber of individuals that are recruited to these funding firms. You know, their backgrounds, their experience is incredibly valuable. So like you say, it's not just the capital. There is also, you know, a lot of knowledge there and experience on disputes that can be shared and can be valuable for the client.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the other thing, of course, is that funders are in this for the money, which is not surprising. That's their job. And that means that they are, by and large, extremely efficient. At least the good ones obviously are efficient in how they manage their money and how they manage the decision making of whether to invest in a particular project. And that creates a whole series of opportunities for funders to become involved in looking at what they do when they're deciding whether to fund something or not, and they're looking particularly at project management abilities by solicitors and yeah. whether they're going to be able to run the job properly. Because one of the things that funders hate, and this is a principal bugbear of theirs, is when yeah. the lawyer goes to them and says, I want a particular amount of money, and the funder then says, well, you can have it, and then halfway through the lawyer says, I've spent it, can I have some more? So one, I suppose, byproduct of funding has been the considerable growth in project management by solicitors who traditionally have not been that good at running litigation disputes. So I think that's certainly a plus point.
Yes, yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, that was something from my experience and time with the judge, you know, when we would speak with lawyers, it was very much, you know, and sisters about communicating the need for budgeting. And like you say, it's funding that is really, you know, specifically around budgets has sort of forced a bit more, you know, time to be spent there and really kind of forward thought and planning.
And of course, it's tied, isn't there, with the growth of budgeting in the courts and the requirement of the court system to have accurate budgets. So we've certainly found, I think, that funding has provided us with a reason to be more disciplined. And I think that certainly amongst our assistants, there's much more emphasis on making sure that there's project management at every stage of a piece of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yeah. And then the next point that I wanted to move on to. So you've spoken about the globalization of disputes and specifically the, you know, there's an example where the former Lord Chief Justice, Lord Wolfe, has now been appointed to be the Chief Justice of a new commercial court in Kazakhstan. Some of the listeners may be familiar, you know, with these developments. Essentially, there's 8 other judges and senior lawyers from the UK who will also be a part of this, you know, where a lot of these Eurasian disputes are currently being held here in the UK. And I was interested to get your view on what more arrangements like this might mean for the city and firms based here. You know, is it going to be talent going abroad and revenue with it? You know, what might be the impact of these developments?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to say is that what is being exported successfully to commercial courts around the world appears to be English and UK law. Mm-hmm. So the first thing to say is these courts are being set up very much along the model of the courts here. That's one of the reasons why, of course, they have so many judges from the English and the UK jurisdictions, and also from other Commonwealth countries that follow a similar code. And that means that those practicing in the courts are likely to continue, but in my view, those who practice in the main courts in London. We've seen in recent years, obviously, commercial courts set up in Dubai, in Singapore, in Hong Kong. You've mentioned Kazakhstan, the new Astana court, which actually opened only last week for business, with a very distinguished panel of judges, each of them trying to capture perhaps their own geographical market and their own political market, where there are different trading blocks. We've also got now in Europe, obviously, the French have opened a court, the English-speaking court, although that appears to be much under French procedure and French law. There's one, as you know, in Holland that's also taken off. So there are a number of places around the world that are competing with London for business. It remains to be seen how successful they are. My own personal view is they are bound to take some business away from London, although not necessarily away from the London lawyers, because I suspect a lot of them will be travelling to conduct these cases, certainly from the bar and the larger law firms, exactly the same way as they run them at the moment. But I think we will see a growth of local courts, and I think we will see an understanding by many businesses around the world that it's cheaper to have a case heard relatively near to your own country than it is to in England, which may be the other side of the world, if you're in Australia or New Zealand or Indonesia or somewhere. So I think it's an inevitable and positive development. And I know that the city is not complacent about the position. And certainly, if there are people who are, I think that they're mistaken. And that's leaving aside the whole issue of Brexit and what happens there, which is another ball game, obviously.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's definitely the, you know, the positive points for the English legal system, as you say, is, you know, exporting our legal system essentially to these other countries. You know, it demonstrates and just promotes, really, you know, the strength of the legal system here. But you can certainly understand, you know, the need to sort of reduce costs if possible. You know, where disputes are being held. And then the next point. So, of course, you've had, you know, a such experience, of course, around all manner of disputes, and most importantly for our discussion around funding. So an interesting point, you know, there's a lot of news constantly featured about, you know, the latest developments and what's moving forward. But what I'd be interested to know is, you know, in your personal view and opinion, you know, what have you come across in the funding or insurance markets that's, you know, potentially lacking in the industry, and where do you think, you know, potentially funding could be improved for firms or for lawyers, or for clients?
Right. Well, I mean, I suppose that traditional funding has got two principal problems, which it has not been able to overcome. I mean, the first one is that funding traditionally has been available for claimants in cases, but not for defendants. And so I imagine that funders, who are quite commercial-minded people, look at each case and say, damn, we're not able to involve on one side, only on the other. And I know that, creative funders are trying to find a way to get into that market, perhaps by saying to defendants, if we help you fund a case, you may get a better result than you otherwise would have done, and we can create some kind of matrix to say what that is worth to you and therefore might be worth to us. So that's one development which I think we're going to see. The second is very much that the funding, particularly one-off funding, is not really suitable for small claims. And the vast majority, I don't mean small claims as in the small claims court, but I mean cases where the amount at stake is perhaps less than £1 million, which is the bread and butter of many law firms' commercial litigation departments. And again, funders have been working hard to try to find ways to tackle that market. There have been a number of hybrid products produced by funders, but I think it's only in the last couple of years that began really to gather speed and look at this perhaps in a way which might produce results. And portfolios are an obvious example where by amalgamating cases in a portfolio, you are sometimes able to adopt a different approach to the quantum than you otherwise would on a one-off funded basis. But that remains an issue where I think the funders need and are trying, I know, to crack that particular nut. We mentioned slightly earlier on after the event insurance, and the growth of insurance alongside funding is very interesting. Clearly, you can now get cover for your own costs from a funder to make sure that they're paid, but you're always going to have under the English system the problem of costs for the other side if you lose. So after event insurance has become standard and indeed not an option as far as most funders are concerned, they insist that it's taken out. You need to be careful because whereas after event insurance used to be waved around as a complete panacea to security for cost claims, in recent years there's been development of a doctrine to say it's only if the insurance cannot be voided that it actually is worth the papers written on for the purpose of defending security for costs. So we're now seeing a range of new policy options, including additional payments to be anti-voiding provisions, sometimes separate bonds, and so on and so forth. That's an area of development. The other one that's happening in the insurance market is really an alternative to traditional funding from a third-party funder, which is a client who has the cash available to fight the case, doesn't really want to commit it, doesn't want to go down the funding route, can now buy a policy which, in the event that he loses the case, will pay up the money he's paid to his lawyers. So with a combination of after-event insurance and own costs insurance, you can actually square that particular circle. And that's something that's relatively new. It's still developing. And I think that's going to be a valuable assistance to clients. The other side of that, of course, is that it's available to defendants equally as it is to claimants.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, that's really the, you know, highlights a key point in terms of how it's evolving in the way that clients can offset their risk, you know, and these insurance products are really stepping in, arguably in some ways, to compete with funding. You know, it's still in the classic, you know, David and Goliath instances where cash is, of course, an issue. We know that, you know, funders very much are embedded there.
Yeah.
But the insurance products, you know, for the larger organizations, as you mentioned, where it's really just more of a risk, you know, consideration for them, you know, all these very interesting models are being added. And so that brings me on to the next point about, you know, how clients view funders. We touched earlier in the discussion about, you know, some of the added benefits that funders bring, you know, with the individuals that work for these funds and their experience, you know, as added value. But one point that we touched on is often clients feel funders, you know, are very expensive, you know, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, from your view, how do you think we can alter this perception for clients and sort of help them recognize the value that funders bring?
Well, the main thing to remember is that the effect of getting funding for your case is that you are insulated entirely from the costs of that case. It's non-recourse, so whether you win or lose, the funder doesn't come to you for the money. The peace of mind of that to a client is, of course, very considerable. Because it is a valuable weapon for a client, there is an expense attached. If funders look at it on a one-off basis, it's expensive because they have to take each case on its own. It's a bit like buying building insurance. If you buy buildings insurance, it's actually very, very cheap because very few claims are made. If you try and insure a building as a one-off, it's going to cost you a fortune. I think it's very difficult for clients perhaps to grasp the value to them until they're in the mess and the pickle. But then when they have the actual strength of the fund around them, they're very happy. One of the advantages of portfolios is, of course, you're able to cross-collateralize claims with the result that the cost should come down. And it's much more sensible for clients to look at cases in that particular type of example. It's a very competitive industry now. There are many, many funders in the marketplace, and they have to be creative. Creative not only on the rates they're charging, but also on the way in which they're recovering their funds. And a solicitor who is used to dealing with funding and knows his way around the funders is going to be able to put together a proposal for funders which really represents the client's interest as well as giving the funders the return they're seeking. And that's a change, really, from the early days when there were very few funders in the market at all and very few lawyers who've been involved in funded cases. I think then the balance of power has shifted at the moment to some extent to the buyers of funding because there are many funders out there in the market. It's a question of quality and a question of knowing what it is that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the point there about how clients essentially become, you know, almost entirely insulated from the risk is very, very important for clients to consider, you know, when they look at pricing. But certainly, you know, as everything's evolving, you know, these agreements are becoming more interesting and definitely, you know, from my observation, as you've said, that the balance is certainly shifting in terms of, you know, towards the client. There's, you know, we hear constantly about funds raising more and more capital, so there's definitely no shortage.
No, it's plenty of money in the market. I talked earlier about, you know, having a good creative relationship with Burford, for example, and any application for funding which we brought would be on the basis of a proposal being put forward, then a series of discussions how best we could deal with it. And, you know, I would have no doubt that they or any other fund would sit down and say, well, this is how we can try and work out what's happening and make it listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the final point I wanted to discuss with you is we've heard more talk around law firm IPOs. Gately was the first in 2015, and only two others have done so since that point. There has, despite the sort of lack of law firms actually following through with the IPO, there's been a lot of talk around this possibility. And, you know, I could certainly see, you know, potentially this could be, you know, provide competition to funders if law firms can raise capital via the markets. So I was interested to get your view on, you know, law firm IPOs and, you know, if this may potentially be a way for firms to source funding in the future.
Yeah. Well, these are my views. They may be completely wrong, but I think there's a lot of soul searching in many firms about the way in which law firms traditionally are run, managed, and evolve. I don't think anybody arriving from Mars to invent a law firm would necessarily need to have a whole number of partners sitting around a table deciding on the wallpaper. And so the reality, of course, is that substantial firms are run as corporate entities in any event, because most of the power is delegated to a group of partners, an executive committee, whatever you want to call them. I think it's almost inevitable that we're going to see firms go down the route of trying to raise money outside of the ABS system. Obviously, it is easier for firms that are managed by a strong managing partner with a smaller, perhaps, bunch of more compliant parts to do that than it might be one of the very, very big organizations where the figures would be enormous, but also the complexities might be worse as well. What you also, I think, might well see is the introduction by funders of themselves investing in law firms. Certainly on the continent, for example, in some of the European systems, some of the firms there that are handling funded disputes have effectively been funded by the funders to do so. Not on a one-off basis of saying, here's the money for this case, but actually helping them finance their law firms. And many of the bigger funders see this as an area of growth for them and where the future may well be. So I think that's something we will see more of. On paper, it's an obvious development for law firms to get funds of their own and manage their own cases. And there's no real reason why that shouldn't happen. There are some issues about conflict to make sure that the management of the cases is done correctly, because the selection of the cases is done correctly, and there's a clear separation between the firm's fighting fund for litigation and the rest of the firm's funds, if you like. There is also the fact that if you run your own cases with your own money, which is effectively what happened before funding existed, because firms would sometimes, without going into any contingency arrangements, just run cases on to make sure they could fight them. If you're going to go beyond that and make it a more formal arrangement, you do miss out on the sounding board of the funder. You do miss out on the second opinion that the funder gives you at the outset of the validity of your claim. And I think you have to be quite careful that the internal disciplines in the firm are such that no one group of partners can dominate others about what doesn't get funded.
Absolutely.
But it's a way, but potentially it's certainly a way forward. It's one which, you know, I'm sure some people will follow.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, what's interesting there is the variety of ways in which, you know, we could see this industry evolve. But certainly, you know, as you mentioned, the sort of second opinion that funders provide, you know, and that experience that they are developing is certainly going to be very valuable. And I think it's important, you know, as you mentioned, that firms don't overlook that.
Yeah.
Well, we have covered a huge amount of ground today, and you know, spoken about many of the current topics around litigation funding, as well as some of the history involved as well. So thank you very much, Guy, for your time. It has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Guy.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. You can find out more information about litigation funding and insurance by heading to fundinglitigation.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at litigationfund_. Alternatively, you can always email me directly, patrick@funding-litigation.com. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to bringing you another episode soon.